everybody, and welcome to the PE Talks Africa podcast, a podcast by the African Private Capital Association. I will be your host, Persia Castellani. And today we are joined by Charles Groom, who is the Director of Agriculture and Forestry at British International Investment. And we have two guests from Mufara. So we have Paul Ohaga, who is the Director of Investments, and we have Eva Warigia, who is the Associate Director of Investor Relations. So in this discussion, we're going to explore the case for forestry as an asset class, venturing across the African continent to examine its wider impact. So could I please ask you all to introduce yourselves and the role you play within forestry in a few sentences. Charles, we can start with you.
Yes, thank you very much, Persia, and delighted to join you and my colleagues from the New Forests team. So my name is Charles Groom. I'm one of the investment directors at BII, British International Investment, the UK government-owned development finance institution. I cover our investments in forestry and related carbon market investments, which we're starting to explore. So British International Investment was founded in 1948 and has a long history of investing in forestry in Africa. We made our first significant investment in Tanzania in the Tanganyika Wattle Company in the 1950s. We played a very large role in helping develop the pulp and paper industry in Eswatini, developing as far as 70,000 hectares. Moving forward in the late 1990s, we developed in Tanzania, the Kilimanjaro Valley Teak Company, which is today a profitable exporting teak company, which is very exciting to see. Coming much more up to date, we've recently invested $200 million into forestry assets in Africa. That started with our new program started with us anchoring the Criterion African Partners Sustainable Forestry Fund One. We then supported Maro, a forestry company in West Africa. And most recently, we're very excited to be anchoring New Forests' African Forestry Impact Platform. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Pasha, and thanks, Charles. My name is Paul Ohaga. I'm the Director of Investments for New Forests Africa. And my work is really to, we have a very clear thesis of what we want to do in the forestry sector in Africa. And my work is to do the deal origination to find the right kind of assets that would fit properly into this portfolio that we are trying to construct and to bring those assets into the platform. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'm Eva Warigia, Associate Director responsible for Investor Relations and Capital Raising at New Forests, specifically looking after the Africa Forestry Impact Platform, or AFIP. AFIP is the Africa fund that is anchored by the British International Investment and managed by New Forests. A little bit about New Forests. We are among the world's largest private forestry investment managers with close to $7.3 billion in assets under management and just a little bit over 1 million hectares of land under management. This is to invest in sustainable land use as we transition towards a just and green, climate positive ecosystem in the future. For New Forests, we are headquartered in Australia, but have geographical investment strategies that cover the Australia, New Zealand area, the United States, Southeast Asia, and in 2021, working alongside BII and other investors, Norfund and Finfund came into Africa to set up AFIP. Across the world, we have investors ranging from development finance institutions, pension funds, insurance companies, and others. And that really speaks to the case for why forestry is a good asset class for institutional investors. It offers stable returns, and I'm happy to talk a lot more about this as we continue with the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you. Looking forward to it. And glad to have you all here with us today. So my first question is, can you paint a picture of the current state of forestry management across Africa, excluding South Africa, And what are the key challenges and opportunities?
Yeah, thanks, Persia. And yeah, happy to give some comments from my and BI's involvement in investments across Africa, as you say, mainly focusing on outside of South Africa. So I think the current state today is an interesting one, where you see several examples of, you know, well-managed, impactful, profitable companies on the continent, such as Green Resources, which is an asset of New Forests African Impact Platform. But I think the sort of commensurate challenge there is that many of those companies are ready for significant capital investment and will require that capital to thrive. And they will need that to really transform themselves into integrated companies with significant investments into downstream processing, you know, taking careful account of market opportunities, both regional and international. There are sort of historic challenges to developing forestry in Africa. I think the lack of processing and the lack of thought about markets is probably paramount, in that proportionally perhaps too much money went into straight planting rather than thinking about market linkages. But that is a lesson sort of well learned by the industry so far. And as an example, Maro in West Africa is well on the path to transforming itself into a integrated plywood company and developing markets both locally and internationally. But there also have been challenges on the cost side. Traditionally, the cost of planting outside of South Africa has been extremely high. And that, I think, is for a number of reasons. It's perhaps some lack of management experience in amongst the founders, lack of capital to see programs through, inappropriate species selection for the right sites. But again, those lessons have been learnt, and certainly with those lessons, and also now with carbon finance, the costs of planting new areas in the right locations can be brought down substantially. So I think the industry is poised for the next wave of capital investment, targeting processing, targeting new areas. What I should say, though, is the real opportunity there is to improve rural livelihoods. Most of this investment will go into deeply rural areas and will have a significant impact on direct employment and indirect employment in those areas. Finally, I should say, in terms of the sort of challenges, the capital needs are very substantial, and BII, cannot do this alone, even with its balance sheet. And so for us, mobilization is a hugely important factor, and hence our partnership with New Forests, because it's very important to see for us to see institutional private capital coming into the markets and delivering on those challenges. Thank you.
Thanks, Charles. Just to sort of build on some of those pieces and just sort of New Forests' view on the opportunity. I think we see what we've seen, and New Forests operates sort of across the world. Historically, we had a lot of there's generally growing demand for sustainable wood products, and historically, a lot of the wood supply came from the global north. We're beginning to see a lot of demand now being put on the global south to come into these markets to supply wood as well, and there are various reasons for that. Some of it is just the vastness of the areas that we have, the speed at which trees grow in the global south compared to the global north, and then the global south as well, populations are just growing rapidly and economies are growing rapidly. So we also need to have sustainable supplies around this. So the opportunity that we saw was really, how do we sort of pick up some of the pieces? DFIs have led a lot of these investments in the past. How can we begin to add value to those investments? and create a pathway to scale them to deliver, you know, really enhanced impact while also delivering returns. And there's some quick things that, you know, since we started going, we've seen. For example, in 2023, I think it was, McKinsey did a study and it showed that Africa was exporting, I think, $3 billion worth of timber and importing, I think, $12 billion. When you look at it from a value perspective, that's what it is. But when you go down to the volumes of what we actually exported, we exported more volumes than we imported, which just says, you know, we're exporting raw, you know, logs or timber and buying back, you know, stuff that's been added, value has been added to elsewhere. And so there was a real opportunity there for us, for the African forestry sector, to actually have enhanced industrialization, as Charles said, which could add a lot more value to our plantations and further encourage development of plantations. So that's a key pathway or part of our program that we'll be looking at in Africa. In addition to that, we, if you look at a country, you know, like Kenya, we have over 1 million people becoming adults every single year. And what this really means is that that is, first of all, a demand for these products, but secondly, begins to put a lot of pressure in certain areas like housing, for example. And there are pathways we can take around housing, either continue with concrete and steel, or sort of try and leapfrog some of these technologies with things like, say, mass timber, for example. So that also places African forest in a place where it can significantly contribute to the global climate challenge and effectively by contributing to some of these, offering solutions to some of these challenges.
No, I very much agree with that, Paul, and certainly on the point about you know, use of timber in construction and with the sort of high urbanisation rate in many African cities, I think that's a key opportunity, and the challenge is to find the right way into those markets and to be supplying, you know, appropriate costed building materials, and then I think the market potential there is very, very significant.
Yeah, it is. And these are things that New Forest does well. I think in Australia, we have one of the largest mass timber production plants. And we also have a company that just does marketing of timber and feeds into the global supply chains. So these are some of the things that we are looking to bring into the continent. We've actually, you know, last year was it, we looked into some mass timber developer was looking to expand, and I think we did that with BII. It was a bit early, but those are some of the opportunities that we see as the ones that will start to change, you know, the fortunes of the forestry sector in Africa. I think for us, what we see as a logical or sort of nice outcome is where we are adding so much value that people begin to, you know, plant more trees because they're actually now seen as being valuable.
Thank you, but that's really interesting. So, kind of thinking back at the opportunities and looking back at the challenges that forestry is kind of helping to solve, can you tell us about the potential of forestry to drive sustainable economic development across Africa? And let's focus on job creation and community livelihoods.
Yeah, certainly, Pleasure. So I think the first thing to note is that, again, is that forestry is a primarily rural and labour-intensive activity. So, you know, the kinds of additional investment we are potentially seeing and already seeing in some instances will naturally, you know, fall into, you know, lower-income communities in rural areas. I think the other point to make is that you know, planted forests do employ people across a very, very broad value chain. So, you know, if you think about the forestry value chain, starting with you know, research into new species and planting techniques, you know, then those people are undertaking the research that's then put into action in the nurseries, which employ, you know, many hundreds of people in some cases. You then have the whole planting chain, the silviculture, and the management of the forests as it grows. You know, the harvesting, the processing, and then obviously, you know, transportation. So across that value chain, the employment is significant. I think BII's portfolio alone has made a direct employment of over 6,000 people in recent years. And then there is, of course, the knock-on effect of both the indirect number of people supported by those direct employees, which can be very high in rural areas, given the lack of alternative employment opportunities, and then the purchases of goods and services by those companies into often local SMEs or related companies. So I think the economics are pretty clear. And then when we look at the opportunities, the opportunities are very much around import substitution. So, for example, plywood, engineered wood products would typically otherwise be imported. So that obviously has both, employment and, taxation benefits and, foreign exchange benefits. So, the future investment opportunities, I think, also drive, positive economic outcomes as companies move down the value chain. But let me pause there and hand over to my colleagues.
Yeah, thanks, Charles. I don't know if in your 6,000 you've counted the almost 2,500 that Grass alone employees.
Yes, that would be including that, yes.
Yeah, and so you can just imagine the potential. And if you go to some of these areas, there's actually economic life that's created just because of the forestry plantation. There's a trading center, there's a guy who repairs motorbikes, there's, a restaurant. There's just all manner of buzzing economic activity that's created because of these plantations being set up there. But just to add on to Charles, we consider forest a natural resource, but if you look across natural resources, we almost have to create the forest. So, if you're going to spend $50 million, establishing a forest plantation, a bit of it is a biological asset, but quite a lot of it is actually money you've paid to people to develop the asset, unlike, a natural resource that you get out that was already developed. So even in its creation, you leave a lot of money on the table to the local communities, but then across the value chain, as Charles has explained, when you harvest it, also then keep, leaving a lot of, the ultimate value, to the local communities. What we've seen is, in addition to actual jobs and taxes, etc., there is also a lot of development in these areas. For example, infrastructure. We need the infrastructure for our forests, but when we develop it, we create access for everybody, literally, which opens up communities. We, a lot of times, have our own staff requiring certain services, healthcare, education, but for that, we then also develop this kind of utilities for the communities, water supply in some places. Some places we've actually built clinics. Some places we've added to classrooms because as Charles mentioned, this forest is a rural product. In Africa, we're 80% rural. So you really get to interact and affect the communities in ways that are really direct and visible when you go to these places.
So when we're looking within these communities, how can we champion gender equality within the forestry sector and create meaningful opportunities for women to participate but also thrive?
Yeah, happy to take that. Not to belabor the point that a lot of forestry on the continent takes place in rural areas. So if you think of a rural area within any part of Africa, east, west, south, north, a lot, the anchors of these communities are women. For the most part, the men who are able have moved to the cities a lot of the time in search of those industrial jobs that then they can repatriate the money back home. So because the anchors are women, we see a lot of people within the labor force being women. And as forestry becomes more industrialized across the world, there's a lot more women taking roles within the value chain. New Forest is a 2X gender champion and subscriber to the 2X gender principles. And what we've been doing is to actively track and try to double the number of women within our portfolios. In Grass, which is our cornerstone asset, we currently have 20% of our labor force being women, and that's within the direct employees. And then beyond that, the contractors who are working in the nurseries get a multiplier effect almost to match the 20%. So what are they doing? Within the forest, the biological assets, we have the women working in the nurseries. We have them taking care of the planting of the actual trees. Within our processing companies, as the industry becomes more technology enabled, we're seeing a lot more women running the equipment and operating the machinery within the assets we are building in this area. And so this creates not just any jobs, but meaningful, skilled jobs. And with that, then we're able to provide high quality jobs with very premium wages that they can then be able to properly uplift the community. What's incredibly promising is that as we put in more machinery within our African forest, we will be creating more value for women to take place in quality control, operational equipment management, but also stepping up, and we are actually putting in place a mentorship program so that they can begin to step into more leadership roles. Foresters like to say women are the best quality control managers because they are very diligent, and that is something we are hoping to encourage and replicate across the multiple assets we are getting into.
Thank you. I think that's relevant being International Women's Day last week. And it's funny because I was just listening back at a panel that we had last year at the Africa Summit, where they were talking about data kind of shows that it's typically women who shy away from new machinery, new technologies. So it's great and very hopeful to hear that the number of women adopting new machinery and technology is increasing. So yes, did anybody else want to share their thoughts?
I can jump in. I mean, I think two things. So certainly observationally, when you visit plantation forestry companies, and you know, I've visited quite a number over recent years, you know, you see firsthand the the depth and quality of the sort of female labor force, and that's being actively encouraged by investees. I think on the other hand, BI is very conscious about the benefit of, you know, actively sort of targeting and promoting gender in our investments. And certainly many of our funds, including New Forest African Forestry Impact Platform, has relevant targets sort of embedded in its fund documents. And that's, I think both welcomed by New Forests and sort of, you know, helpful in promoting behavioral change.
Thanks, Charles. So my next question for you both, is, what are your visions and recommendations for the future of forestry management in Africa? How can we unlock its full potential for a sustainable and prosperous future for the continent? And I think for this question, we'll begin with the New Forest team.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Pasha. Yeah, I think what we have seen is a couple of things in the sector are very clear. So on the biological asset side, we found on the ground that, it's truly, we do have good lands, the trees grow, you know, we figured out the biology, there's lots of work that has been done in the genetics, thanks to a lot of the investments done by the DFIs, you know, including BII over the years. So a lot of that side of the forestry sector in Africa is, I think, quite advanced. And we see this sort of across the continent, whether in Mozambique, Tanzania, through to Western Africa. What's sort of been the missing link, as you know, I think who mentioned, is the industrialization part. And that's really, really critical. Because the value of the forests are only worth as much as the highest and best use. If the best use of it is sort of scaffolding, then that's how much you value your forest. If the best use of it is a nice, you know, tick table, then that's how much your trees get valued. If it's a more advanced product, that's how it gets valued. So to put value into African forestry, we must, on the industrialization piece, we must put it to the highest and best use, because these are really valuable assets and biological assets. And so a lot of focus needs to go into driving that. And we need to match this with the right, amount and structure of capital. So one of the things that FIP has done, anchored by BII, is to structure the platform in a way that it supplies capital and other capabilities from New Forests that match the sector requirements. So FIP is a permanent capital vehicle, which was badly needed in the sector. We had this, trees that are long dated, you have rotations that are up to 20 years in some cases. And when they were funded through sort of short-term debt or shorter-term tenure funding structures, it created problems downstream. I think we mentioned that earlier, where then there was nobody to invest in industrialization because people were now figuring out how to retire the investments. So FIP came in to solve that problem. And then when it's tied down into New Forests, New Forests then brings its global capabilities across the value chain, from the genetics to forestry management, but most importantly to the commercialization of these assets. So our pathway is to drive that, prove that actually it is a commercially viable sector, as we've done in other parts of the world. And the ultimate objective is for us to drive in the right amount of capital that's required. I think somebody mentioned, I think Charles mentioned, that it's actually a very capital intensive sector. And for it to succeed, it requires that capital at scale. But a lot of work has to be done. Find these assets, consolidate them, harness the synergies, bring industrialization, and then through the networks and the global capacity of New Forest, try and drive in that kind of long-term commercial capital. And then that will begin to unlock the future of forests in Africa. This is not new. I think, BII may have been involved in some of these forestry assets before. Some of these countries we are in, including Kenya, which doesn't have much forestry today, actually did have vibrant forestry sectors many years ago in parts of Nigeria, West Africa, Nigeria, Zambia, Zimbabwe. So we are not really working with something that's impossible here. It's been done before. It sort of broke down, but we can see the pathway to restoring it in a brighter future now, because we have the climate challenge also giving impetus to Africa, giving more energy to African forestry. And we can see a pathway to unlocking the large pots of capital that can bring it to sustainability.
I was going to add something there, and it's around the quality of the output. So we've spent some time talking about industrialization, and if you look at global demand, there's call for sustainable products, not just any paper, but FSC set of forestry standard certified paper product. So one of the things we're trying to do as a fund is to introduce this global certification practices in our assets, so that even as we begin to target international markets, they are able to comply and fetch that higher value in terms of output, whether it's in our sawn timber or the subsequent primary secondary products like paper and veneers and so forth. And what this then does is to allow put our own asset products on the map. If you think of farm to fork, as we are used to hearing about it in agriculture, translate that to forestry, you are able to track the product in Europe, in the United States, all the way back to the forest it came from in Africa. Among the things that helps with is the community impact that derives, because there's an increased awareness of African products around the world. So that's one area. And then finally, the other one I would add is adopting a mixed-use approach to forestry. It's something we're already practicing in Southeast Asia as New Forest, and looking to replicate that in Africa as well later within our permanent as a fund. And this is to introduce areas that allow for the forest, but also other human economic activity to coexist alongside the forest. What else can we do, like beekeeping within the forest, and the people are then able to derive additional value from the plantation assets as we manage this for timber and related products. Thanks.
Now I can just jump in and pick up on that. I mean, I think that point that Eva made about traceability, and I think that's going to be an important pull factor from the consumer markets. And I know in Europe, legislation is coming, and regulations to promote traceability and right down to the source level. And that, I think, will be an important pull factor, an important opportunity for companies to invest. There's a company called a CMO, which is already providing services in that area, but also important to promote sustainable forestry, which obviously, you know, all of our investments are into.
Thank you. That was very interesting. And I think now we've kind of touched on job creation. We've touched on community impact. So that's kind of building that global community, as well as improving the local community livelihoods. And we've also kind of touched on the kind of profitability, or the case for profitability within forestry. Another thing that we have touched on is climate and climate change. So in your opinion, how do forestry investments contribute to mitigating climate change and achieving net zero emissions on a pan-African scale? And Charles, I'll hand over to you to answer this one first.
Yeah, thanks, Persia. And certainly I think that you know, the climate theme, you know, underlies, you know, everything BI is doing in forestry right now and has done for a number of years. And I think it's been a major driver of our, you know, renewed appetite for forestry investments in Africa and the other emerging markets we can invest in across Asia. So I think, first of all, you know, we all are aware that, you know, significant action is needed to make net zero by 2050. And within that, it's clear that you know, nature-based systems have a huge role to play in protecting ecosystems and also in sequestering carbon. And today, forestry is a proven technology for carbon removals at a low cost. And of course, we welcome and need technological solutions to carbon removals. But forestry certainly can play a role, you know, right now, and action is needed right now. I think as well as the, you know, the perhaps more obvious benefit of sequestering carbon in trees as they grow, you know, it's also sort of links into the theme we've been discussing about, you know, timber being used in a more sustainable way in building products and other consumer products. And certainly the long-lived nature of those wood products can have a significant impact on longer-term carbon sequestration. And also the, you know, the carbon saved relative to a ton of concrete or steel is significant. So, you know, the benefits are multiple, and I think we will start to see those pull factors, you know, and as you know, Paul was mentioning, we're already seeing investments happening in some sort of newer technologies around you know, mass timber, you know, starting with some investments in South Africa. I think, you know, Criterion Africa Partners is just making a new investment there, and as Paul mentioned, we're hoping certainly to see more in East Africa, and you know, looking forward to supporting new forests on that. I think the other aspect is that the demand globally for wood products, more traditional wood products, is growing rapidly. You know, the areas of plantation are not growing rapidly, so you know, the natural consequence of that is that the only alternative source is continued denuement of natural forests, which is clearly not welcome from a climate perspective. You know, it's far better to be taking forest products and sort of timber from sustainable planted forests, and where appropriate, sustainable you know, logging of natural forestry. But certainly, you know, what we want to avoid is seeing you know, continued pressure on natural forests from timber demand, including in the African context, I should note, of charcoal. So, you know, looking for alternatives there is hugely important. I then want to sort of jump to a slightly different point, which is that you know, obviously climate you know, goals and objectives and not something that should be imposed on sort of communities and countries. And you know, the just transition requires us to be making investments that have a significant impact on rural economies and rural livelihoods and rural incomes. And I think I think in fact that any sort of climate-led investment into rural areas that does not create viable income streams for local communities, won't stand a chance of succeeding. And I think we're all very aware of that. And that mindset, I think, has changed, very much over the last number of decades. I think coming to sort of carbon finance itself, we are seeing significant appetite for carbon-related investments into Africa. We're seeing the emergence of government regulations, which in some cases can be highly supportive and also looking to appropriate sharing of income streams with communities and with governments is welcome in an appropriate manner. And that, I think what that carbon finance can deliver is, first of all, sort of more upfront liquidity, which has been a constraint on forestry, but also can reduce the cost of new plantings as new areas will have multiple income streams, both from carbon markets, but also from wood products, and can be done in a way which, again, engages local employment and local communities and delivers income into those communities. But so we're very excited about this area. It's an area that BII is starting to explore, starting to make some progress in carbon investments. And I think will be an important area of growth on the continent. But I'm sure Eva and Paul have much to add.
Yeah, I can go. I think from a new forest perspective, carbon and nature-based investing is particularly exciting for us because it proves our case for working towards a just and sustainable future. We at New Forest were the first to list carbon credits in the regulated California market. So it's a space we know quite well. Actively investing in conservation for both biodiversity and climate action through carbon credits in the United States, in Southeast Asia, restoring forests, natural forest conservation, restoring peatlands in Asia. And these are some of the capabilities that we'll be looking to replicate in Africa. Our thesis so far has been to focus on plantation assets and then build towards nature-based investing on the continent, but it's an area we're seeing increasing interest. At a global level, we have Africa poised to be, or it's often poised to be, the sort of last market of market of last resort in terms of addressing to climate action. And we are very excited to take part in leading that. Like Charles mentioned, plantation assets allow for people to give the natural forests a break, and we're already beginning to see a lot of pressure on Africa's natural forest basin, the Congo area, through into Central and West Africa. So creating opportunities of active forest plantation then helps relieve our natural forests of some of that pressure. At the same time, we need to restore some of that lost land within this natural forest, and that's where our efforts, our expertise in restoring natural forests elsewhere comes in handy, because this is an area we're looking to actively get into. As a manager, given our expertise, we realize there's a lot more corporate institutional clients that are looking to address their own sustainability goals and meet their own net zero targets. And so we are offering ourselves as a partner for that, given our capabilities and ability to roll this out in a more sustainable but also professionally managed fashion. And then lastly, it's like Charles mentioned, in terms of talking to carbon specifically in Africa, there's still a lot of policy work to be done on the continent, we believe, but New Forest, being on the continent, we've been very active in helping some of the local governments think through what carbon credits work best for themselves, their communities, and importantly, their assets, and helping to steer local direction towards that which is just and offers a shared advantage to all. Overall, I think carbon has the opportunity to bring the right attention of private capital to Africa's natural forest. Not just natural forest, but forestry in general. Yeah. Paul, you wanted to add something? You can go on.
I think you've said it all. You know, when you look at this, solving this climate problem, a lot of effort and financing has gone into solving the energy side, so the energy transition. But there's a limit to which, you know, we cannot stop living. And so there'll be always some residual emissions. And the natural capital side just comes in to alleviate that and enable us, you know, if we're able to uplift the natural capital assets, do the forestry, improve biodiversity, restore nature, it solves, I think they say it solves sort of 30-40% of the problem, whereas the energy side was going to solve 60%. But it also eventually allows us to find the equilibrium sooner rather than later. And the forests and natural assets will continue to remove the residual carbon that we must continue to emit even when we complete our energy transition.
Yes, and I was just saying that I'm glad that we touched on the Congo and that kind of Congo basin area, because I feel like I hear time and time again that the regions that the basin cover will become the kind of lungs of the universe. And just before I move on to the last question, Charles, I just wanted to touch on a point that you made around the increase in demand for timber and the increase in demand for wood, just because I think this will help to kind of strengthen the case for forestry as an asset class. What are some of the reasons behind that growing demand?
I mean, they're quite contextual. I think, overall economic growth would be linked to increase in demand for timber products in a sort of natural way. But I think in the African context, I think the urbanization is a significant driver of demand for wood products. There's also continued strong demand for fuel wood in the absence of other sort of cost-effective alternatives, although we are seeing some innovations in that space, which is exciting. So I think there are particular factors in particular markets, as well as the overall linkage to economic growth.
Yeah, I can build on that. You touched on urbanization, so demand for real estate, housing, and sustainable housing at that. Also, affordable housing, if you think of the cost of housing that would require timber versus steel and concrete, cumulatively it's significantly lower a resource to use for a finished an entity versus getting concrete and steel in it. The other one is connectivity, interestingly. On the infrastructure side, we know demand for energy continues to prevail across the continent, and alongside that is demand for internet connectivity, and with that comes need for transmission and distribution poles, a lot of which are supplied from some logs coming from our forests. And then we get the case for furniture, which again can be tied to urbanization and demand for housing. And like we have just mentioned, the push for climate action, protecting natural forests, so creating an alternative source for timber to do all the things we've mentioned, then builds the profile of a whole new greenfield area to create an alternative source of timber. And then finally is infrastructure itself, getting, as the world goes green, in Europe you see a lot of airports getting substitutes for steel beams with GLT or high quality laminated timber products to just act as the infrastructural support for large construction sites. And increasingly hotels and hospitality entities are marketing themselves as sustainable and attracting people with that as a tagline. So putting more in their use of timber and wood. I think Tanzania's Mfinga, Zanzibar's Mfinga project on Funga, is it called? Fumba Town, yes, it's called Fumba Town. Tanzania's Fumba Town is a good case study of an entire city built out of sustainable product. And it's something that we're really excited to talk about as people who are taking part in that ecosystem.
Thank you. If you have got a link to kind of that case study or story, I'd be happy to share it within the description for this podcast as well. But just touching on your points about the world going green and sustainability, I'll move on to my final question, which is, what role can sustainable forestry practices play in conserving Africa's unique biodiversity and ensuring a healthy future for the continent's ecosystems?
If you look at, for example, what was destroying biodiversity, what was leading to sort of loss of forest cover in the places like the Congo Basin, and to begin to address, you know, those issues. So, you know, for example, socioeconomic issues driving people to cut trees for firewood, or destroy biodiversity to create like other forms of livelihood. Plantation forests come to solve all those problems as a first step. So plantation forests stop destruction of natural habitats, help preserve biodiversity. But within our forest itself, we talked of certifications. We aspire to have all our forests certified with the right certifications, whether it's FSC or any other certification. And when we subscribe to these standards, some of the things that we are required to do by those standards is really to preserve and improve biodiversity. And we've gone beyond even just what's required of those certifications. For example, I think you're required by FSC to have about 10% of your sort of concession land as reserved as conservation or biodiversity. In a lot of our plantations, we're going as high as 40%, you know, where there are wetlands, where there's wildlife, where, you know, there's other forms of natural flora and fauna. We preserve that, and we actually have specific targets, not just to preserve, but to monitor and improve the quality of those habitats. So if there are bird species, can we improve on the quality of those species? If there are, you know, the wildlife corridors, how can we make it better? So beyond preservation. And we also work alongside communities where we have these forests to give them forms of livelihood that help them preserve other natural habitats that and you know, biodiversity habitats that would otherwise be destroyed if they didn't have economic livelihoods. So in places like Uganda, for example, where we operate, and there are places where they need fuel wood, when we do harvesting of our trees and the pieces that we cut off that could, will not work as sawn timber or other forms of, you know, sort of structural timber, we allow them to use some of these in there as fuel wood, and that stops them from having to go out and cut, you know, some natural habitats to have their fuel wood. But it also helps us in the forest because it's this sort of stuff that when we live in the forest causes forest fires. So forests are clean and it's a win-win situation. So there's very strong, at the heart of forestry actually is improvement of biodiversity and protection of natural habitats.
Case study of observations from our own assets across the world is with even plantation assets, we get to see restoration of both plant and animal species. So you will find that birds that had previously emigrated from a place returning because they have fodder for themselves and for their for procreation. And this is something that we actively track as part of our impact targets. Beyond gender and our net carbon sequestration, we are also, as a fund, actively targeting our biodiversity improvement and have a real hard number of improving our the biodiversity of our assets by at least 14% within the first 10 years. So that's the other thing about it, is that it's a measurable, quantifiable impact target that this asset class can also help in bringing, in in restoring, and for LPs, it should be an exciting venture and one way to actively take part in environment restoration.
And just to add to what Eva said, what some of the things we are seeing is, you know, especially with the push of climate finance, we are seeing it becoming viable to move into sort of more degraded lands, more underutilized lands, lands that would otherwise not contribute to nature properly in any way. We're seeing those becoming a lot more viable with, you know, especially with climate finance now.
Thank you. And yes, I think that was a great kind of note to end on. Thank you all for coming. It's been a great conversation and I'm excited to share this podcast. We're going to be releasing on International Forestry Day. So if you're listening to this, I'm sure I can say happy International Forestry Day to you. And yes, thank you, Charles, Paul and Eva for joining me.
Well, thank you. And it's been very interesting and happy to be talking about forestry in Africa.
Thanks too for the opportunity to showcase New Forests as an asset manager within the space, and looking forward to the final cut.
And thank you all our audience for listening. If you would like some more information on the work that both British International Investment and New Forests are doing within the forestry sector, I will include links to both of their websites in the description below. And if you enjoy listening to this podcast, please feel free to explore our other episodes, and I will see you there.